Shell wraps up its drilling season in the Arctic Ocean. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 31st. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, more and more communities in Alaska are heating with biomass.
You can use the brush, the branches, stuff that, you know, a lot of times if you're harvesting hot firewood, you just cut that off and leave it out in the woods.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Come to Sitka Whale Fest on November 1st through the 4th for a weekend that combines current North Pacific scientific research with a variety of fun community events and whale-watching cruises. This year, there's a convenient Juneau-Sitka ferry schedule. Information about early registration and discounts at sitkawhalefest.org. Whale Fest is science made festive and a program of the Sitka Sound Science Center. This message sponsored by the Sitka Whale Fest.
Shell Oil wrapped up its exploratory drilling season in the Arctic today. As promised, not a drop of oil was spilled in the process, but not a drop was drilled either. Shell only started drilling in early September, which limited the numbers of wells the company was able to complete this season. Spokesman Curtis Smith.
We drilled a top hole at our Burger Prospect in the Chukchi Sea and one at our Savuluk Prospect in the Beaufort Sea.
The two top holes extend only 1,500 feet below the seafloor, stopping well short of the oil reserves that Shell is trying to access. That's because the Department of Interior prohibited the company from drilling deeper without its oil spill containment barge on site. That vessel was under construction for most of the summer and didn't receive final approval from the Coast Guard until mid-October, too late for it to be of use this year. But Smith says the Arctic Challenger is ready for next summer.
So our intention is to literally pick up where we left off. We're actually leaving anchors at both of our prospects. So when the sea ice retreats, hopefully in July of 2013, we can get back on those well sites, make the most of the time that we have, and drill to the objective.
Whether that happens as smoothly as Shell hopes is contingent on a number of things going according to plan. The company faces potential legal battles over proposed revisions to its air quality permits. For this drilling season, the Environmental Protection Agency effectively waived some of the requirements of the permit, but formal revisions are still working their way through the public process. Smith says Shell isn't concerned about the potential for litigation.
We think these permits are very robust. They have withstood the scrutiny of the public, regulators, of course, and even the courts. So we're very confident that we'll be back at work in 2013 with all of the necessary permits.
Shell will also need to show regulators that its oil spill containment dome is fully functional before drilling starts next year. The dome was damaged during testing in Puget Sound in September.
The internal investigation determined that the Arctic Challenger's dome was damaged when it descended too quickly due to a faulty electrical connection. So we're modifying those specific elements of the dome to ensure that it's ready for next year.
In the long term, Smith says the company is looking ahead to 2015 when the company's leases in the Arctic start to expire.
We're in discussions with the Department of Interior about possible extensions to those leases.
For now, the Noble Discoverer drill rig is already on its way south, and the Kulik will be on its way in a few days, headed for Unalaska, where it will remain docked for the winter. Environmental groups say this year's drilling season was a failure. Mike Levine is senior counsel at Oceana. He says Shell's mishaps this summer should read as a cautionary tale.
Shell lost control of its drill ship in Dutch Harbor, backtracked on commitments to recover spilled oil and to protect clean air, and ultimately damaged its own containment dome in an effort to test it.
Levine says this summer offers many lessons and indications for the future for citizens, government regulators, and the companies.
Hopefully Shell will learn what the company needs to do to be prepared, and hopefully other companies will look hard at the difficulties inherent in drilling in the Arctic Ocean and in responding to a spill.
And by many accounts, they already are. Last month, the head of oil giant Total warned other companies about the dangers in offshore drilling in the Arctic. At last night's assembly meeting in Anchorage, Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan said the city's port expansion project would cost at least $300 million more dollars. Sullivan was pressured into finally giving a cost estimate after the U.S. Maritime Administration released a statement saying that the initial draft port study indicates that the design is inappropriate for the local environment. Assemblymember Paul Honeman questioned Mayor Sullivan.
Would it be fair to say that either project, whichever way to complete this port project, at whatever it looks like, is going to be in excess of $300 million or $400 million or something that we can give to our constituents and our residents before they in advance of the vote?
Yeah, you have that information now, sir. Feel free to share.
So $300
million? At least.
The most recent Port of Anchorage Expansion Project quarterly report says that $385 million have already been received for the project. The mayor said at Tuesday's assembly meeting that he plans to ask the legislature for $250 million more next session. Then there's $50 million he's hoping to get via the statewide transportation bond. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Sitka works to revitalize its downtown area after several businesses close up shop.
One store is not an island, and so we are not a reason for people to come downtown.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
The Kinnick Arm Bridge would create a second link between the Mat-Su and Anchorage for use during highway closures, emergencies, and as a potential evacuation route. For more facts on the Kinnick Arm Bridge, visit kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnick Arm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Long-lasting megastorms like Hurricane Sandy are likely tied to a warming Arctic. Dr. Jennifer Francis, a researcher with the Institute of Marine and Coastal Sciences at Rutgers University, says rising Arctic temperatures have changed the jet stream that drives weather in the Northern Hemisphere.
We know that the reason the jet stream exists is because it's warmer to the south than it is to the north. And it's that temperature difference between the Arctic and the lower latitudes that drives the winds in the jet stream. But as the Arctic has been warming faster, that means that the temperature difference has become smaller, and so the winds of the jet stream have in fact become weaker.
Francis says a weaker jet stream has more and longer north and south turns, like a meandering river, and that's causing drawn-out weather, including extremes like droughts and storms.
So if you're in a stormy pattern, for example, it means that the storms will last longer, just like Alaska experienced this past September. They had a seemingly unending string of storms affecting them, and that was because there was a big southward dip in the jet stream that just stayed put. So what we're experiencing right now here today along the East Coast is a big northward swing in the jet stream, which actually steered Sandy into the mid-Atlantic region.
Francis expects the jet stream will continue to be affected as melting of Arctic sea ice and snow cover causes the north to warm faster than mid-latitudes. She says short of a volcanic eruption, there's nothing to counteract the warming effect of accumulating CO2 in the atmosphere. Francis presented her research during an Alaska Center for the Climate Assessment and Policy webinar yesterday. Redistricting has many incumbents facing other incumbents for the Alaska legislature this election, and that's true of two House races in the Fairbanks area. House District 2 includes Two Rivers, and House District 38 represents Nenana and Tanana. KUAC's Tim Ellis attended a forum featuring all the candidates and has this story.
The 100-plus people who showed up for the Greater Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce event at the Carlson Center heard more of same from the candidates on such issues as economic development and protecting Eielson Air Force Base from downsizing, and the themes that have dominated this election year, energy and oil company taxes. But there seemed to be a bit sharper partisan tone to the exchanges, such as these responses by House District 2 candidates to a question about what they would do in the coming legislative session to bring down the high cost of energy in the interior. Democrat Bob Miller answered by recounting a package of measures from the last session that House Republicans blocked.
First part, energy vouchers, which could have been putting 250 gallons of fuel into your tanks right now. Part two, begin building the infrastructure, as I said a moment ago, investing in the infrastructure for distributing natural gas and building its facilities while we truck gas into town. Third part, build the largest pipeline we can get from the North Slope to Valdez.
Republican Tammy Wilson pointed out that House Republicans backed the natural gas trucking plan by appropriating $3.75 million to help pay for it. And she says the voucher plan was a short-sighted approach that wouldn't solve the problem.
As far as the energy vouchers go, that's $75 million just to the interior. What could $75 million do as far as building that infrastructure versus just 1 month of help? So we need to be looking at those long-term projects.
District 38 Republican Alan Dick gave lukewarm support to the gas trucking plan and, like all the candidates, said a natural gas pipeline is the long-term answer. He says building a natural gas-fired electrical generating station on the North Slope would bring cheaper power more quickly and wouldn't require as much infrastructure as a local natural gas distribution system.
Electricity is cheap to transmit, no storage problems. Obviously, the long-term solution pipeline from the North Slope to Fairbanks, the question is how big is the pipe? And the answer to that is how big is the market?
Dick's opponent, Democrat David Guttenberg, says a North Slope power plant and the trucking and pipeline proposals all should be studied.
The cost-effective nature of each one of these projects and not give up on any of them. It's not just Fairbanks. It's the rest of the state as well, all of the interior, all of the villages.
The District 2 and 38 candidates are all incumbents pitted against each other due to redistricting, and all have firsthand experience with the political battles of the previous session, including the biggest battle over Governor Sean Parnell's proposal to cut oil company taxes by some $2 billion a year. That issue came up often during the forum, as it has throughout this year's campaign, with Republicans insisting it's the only way to boost oil production and hiring, and Democrats saying it would require huge budget cuts without a guarantee that oil companies would pump more oil or hire more Alaskans. The candidates got one more chance to clash over the issue in response to a question from a member of the Make Alaska Competitive Coalition, which repeated the contention that Alaska's oil taxes are the highest in the nation, and which asked the candidates what they would do to reduce them. Democrats Guttenberg and Miller both rejected the premise of the question. They say the state's oil taxes are about right, that there are more companies and workers up on the slope than ever, and that the system is not broken. Here's Miller.
I want somebody to explain to me in great detail how, when the industry is making record profits and the state of Alaska is taking in record revenues, how is that broken?
Wilson pounded on a stack of what she said were email printouts from concerned local business persons and said she'd be glad to oblige.
These are the emails and letters that were sent by folks like you telling us that we do not have the jobs here in Fairbanks because the tax structure is broken.
I'm Tim Ellis in Fairbanks.
People from around Alaska are gathered in Fairbanks to talk about biomass energy. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the conference is geared toward helping smaller communities replace high-cost oil-fired energy with wood-fueled systems.
The Biomass Conference is being put on by the city of Tanana, a small interior community which has pioneered use of wood-fired space heat and hot water systems to reduce consumption of diesel fuel. City Manager Bear Ketzler says the conference is aimed at helping others learn from Tanana's experience.
When we started moving into it, we kind of thought, let's just keep in mind that we want to take our learning curve. And every time you make those improvements, the usage of gallons of diesel just drop tremendously.
Ketzler says wood replaces 8,000 to 12,000 gallons of diesel fuel annually in Tanana. He says many communities represented at this week's conference are more compact than Tanana and better positioned to make broader use of wood-fired energy through district heating systems. Ketzler says wood can also fuel a local economy.
Most of our wood has come from driftwood. This year we had a kind of a unique thing happen. We had another community a couple hundred miles up from Tanana bring down this big, tremendous, large raft of firewood. And so that 70 cords coming from Stevens Village, was a welcome in a sense of that's just more or less wood that have to be gathered locally.
Ketzler says Tanana pays $250 a cord for wood delivered to the city. This week's biomass conference covers a broad range of subjects from planning and system design to maintenance, fuels, and sustainability. Not all communities can count on driftwood to fuel biomass systems. Galena City Council member John Korda says wood chips are being eyed to fuel a biomass boiler to heat the Galena boarding school.
The cool thing about chips is you can utilize way more of the resource. You can use the brush, the branches, stuff that, you know, a lot of times if you're harvesting hot firewood, you just cut that off and leave it out in the woods.
The Galena School operates out of a former Air Force base, and Korda says military money to cover fuel during the transition is running out, and the school's future hinges on stabilizing energy costs. Galena Village Corporation CEO Betty Huntington says the Wood Energy Conference is a good learning opportunity before investing in biomass.
It costs a lot, so we don't want to make any big mistakes here, you know, so everybody has to do their homework. I mean, we want to support it, so I'm here at this conference just to learn what other people are doing and what works and what may work for us.
A wide range of biomass technology is getting attention at this week's conference. Fairbanks alternative energy entrepreneur Bernie Carl updated conference attendees on a large-scale biomass power plant he's developed in conjunction with United Technologies. Carl is also marketing a smaller homeowner-sized Canadian-made biomass gasification boiler.
These are EPA-approved home gasifiers that you can put in your home for burning your wood. And if you buy from us, we're going to see to it that you have a little 1.5 kW little screw that goes with it so you can make electricity for your home.
Carl says a model size for an average house costs about $6,000, but can pay for itself in energy savings in a year and a half. The Wood Energy Conference, which runs through Friday, includes field trips to Carl's North Pole biomass facility, the Superior Pellet Fuel Plant in North Pole, and a fly-in to see the wood-fired facilities in Tanana. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
There was volcanic ash in the air over the Shelikof Strait and parts of Kodiak Island yesterday. While the Alaska Volcano Observatory showed all was normal, it turned out that a volcano had erupted, though it wasn't yesterday. It was almost exactly 100 years ago. The National Weather Service office in Anchorage reported that ash from the Nova Rupta explosion of 1912 was being whipped up by strong northerly winds because of a lack of snow cover in the Valley of 10,000 Smokes and Katmai National Park on the Alaska Peninsula. The ash was lifted to about 4,000 feet and drifted over the Shelikof Strait and Kodiak Island. It was a significant enough amount that the Weather Service issued a warning to pilots as volcanic ash can damage airplane engines. Known as the Katmai explosion, the 1912 eruption came from a volcanic vent later named Nova Rupta. It was the largest volcanic eruption of the 20th century, and ash fell on Kodiak for 3 days. Since the start of the year, at least 4 stores have closed in downtown Sitka. Fewer visitors are coming aboard cruise ships, sales tax revenues are declining, and business owners have long expressed concerns about the financial health of Lincoln Street. Now, a group of Sitka residents hopes to do something about it. KCAW's Ed Ronco reports.
The cellar should be closed right now, but it's packed. Customers are picking over clothing and board games, and it's hard to move freely through the shop's narrow passages. Everyone's come downtown for Moonlight Madness, a Halloween-themed event organized by the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah, it's huge. We look forward to it because we're able to get a lot of inventory out, clearance the items to get ready for our holiday.
Vicky Denkinger owns the cellar. Tonight, she's dressed as a 1920s flapper, like the rest of her staff. Warm light spills out of the store and onto the sidewalk as people come and go. But across the street, most of the block is dark and empty.
We need new businesses. We need people that are willing to come in and want to start a new business because it affects us when they're not here. Less people come downtown. They'd rather go to catch Juno or online.
Three of the block's five storefronts have signs in the window reading, "For Rent." Baranov's Russian and American store called it quits this year, as did Fairweather Gallery and Gifts, which moved to Juneau to capitalize on a higher number of cruise passengers. And it doesn't look as though Del Sol, a summer-only t-shirt store, is coming back next season either. Further down the street, the Alaska Basket Company is having a closeout sale. A sign on the door there says the last day of business is October 31st. None of the Moonlight Madness shoppers head down this stretch of sidewalk, but if you go back in time, just a few hours, you'll find Doug Osborne and Angela McGraw walking along the street on a mission.
Hello.
Good. Hi. Hey, how are you?
Fine. How are you doing?
I am good. I have a flyer. We're doing a...
Osborne and McGraw are part of the Sitka Health Summit, an annual gathering put on by Sitka's two hospitals, where locals establish health and wellness goals for the community. The top three are chosen by popular vote, and this year's big winner was revitalizing downtown.
So yeah, we're just getting together. We're going to look at what some other towns have done.
Wait, stop. What does revitalizing downtown have to do with health and wellness?
In a healthy community, the healthy choice is the easy choice. And so you make a downtown area that's good for kids, that's good for people that are walking, that's good for people that may have disabilities, that's good for people that bike, that's good for a lot of different people with a lot of different ways of getting around. So here's Sitka Bazaar.
Osborne and McGraw drop in on a few stores, including Brenner's Fine Clothing and Gifts. It's open year-round and has been in business in Sitka since 1967. Stephanie Brenner runs the business, and she says the loss of so many downtown neighbors has an impact on those who remain.
One store is not an island, and so we are not a reason for people to come downtown. So when you have less businesses downtown, it's less reasons for people to actually come downtown.
Just off the top of her head, Brenner lists a few ideas to revitalize downtown. New paint on prominent buildings. Make seasonal stores keep their lights on in the off-season so downtown doesn't look dead. Put more bathrooms on her end of Lincoln Street.
You've thought a lot about this.
I think when you live here, and I feel like I live downtown, or I work at least downtown, you're around it all the time.
Osborne, McGraw, and the Health Summit Group hope to develop a plan by channeling that energy, Brenner's or anyone else's. Osborne says there might be differing approaches, but he says downtown areas still matter to communities. He cites shopping centers in the lower 48 that have been built to mimic the appearance of a small town's main street.
I mean, they look nice and they look groomed and they look like a small town, but they're missing a soul because they're not real. They're not real. They're companies that are catering to a suburban population and trying to maximize their profit, and they're not having people live there. And people drive there and go to work there, but...
And
it's
we're
not
lucky.
Like,
we're already starting with the soul.
We're starting with the real town.
I know.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
The haunted ship is back in Sitka. After a several-year hiatus, the U.S. Coast Guard cutter Maple is inviting everyone to weave through its dark, narrow hallways Thursday and Friday evening. The crew has taken this week off of their normal schedule to deck out the ship in spooky Halloween decorations. There will be six scary zones, each with its own eerie theme and designed by a different group. Ensign Andrea Bird is the morale officer and was in charge of organizing the event. She says they only recently got word they'd be in port this week. When they found out, they buckled down and started doing some serious planning. Bird says transforming the ship was easy because the space is so familiar.
It's our job to know this boat inside and out, so it's real easy for us to take something real simple on the boat and turn it into something scary because we know where all the best hiding spots are. We know everything about this ship.
Every group of visitors will get a guide to walk them through the ship. The crew recommends that younger kids, 12 and under, come from 6 to 7 p.m., because from 7:30 to 10:30, the haunted ship will amp up its freak factor. Thousands of spawned-out salmon create an eerie sight on many Alaska riverbanks this time of year. Haines author Rosalie Lowen calls them zombie fish and brings us this Halloween story from the Chilkoot River.
It's Halloween on the Chilkoot, and there are zombies at the river.
The mist creeps up off the water and hides the corpses, but the stink of them still rises up to meet me. The gulls are circling and screaming overhead, a soundtrack for a horror show. They land to peck at the dead. They eat the eyes first. They have grown fat from this morbid feasting, and when they turn their heads to look at me and hop closer, my heartbeat is suddenly loud in my ears. I am at the point of turning back when I sense movement in the shadowy woods behind me. I can almost make out the silhouette of a gigantic, hairy beast lurking beneath the trees. The dim sunshine percolates through branches and glints off something that makes me think of razor-sharp claws, each longer than my fingers. At that moment, a raven flies up suddenly from a branch, making a strange call that sounds almost like words. Is it a warning? It is perhaps best not to turn back. I drag my boat to the water while bones slip and crack beneath my boots. Casting off from shore, my keel grazes the bodies of the nearly dead, half floating, half swimming. These zombies stare up through the water at me, and their eyes, if they still have eyes, are an eerie, bloody red. Some have only empty sockets. The birds have been too eager. When I row, my oars thud into half-rotten bodies and jar loose bits of flesh. Not far from shore, I sense that something is watching me. Something not human. I turn to look over my shoulder and catch a glimpse of a ghostly gray form with preternaturally large eyes slipping back into the dark waters, close enough so that silver rings lap at the side of my boat. It's only a seal, I tell myself, only a seal. But I row a little faster to the deeper shoals where my crab pot waits and the wheeling, crying birds circle lower around my boat. Trick or treat, come on out to the Chilkoot if you dare.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Tim Ellis and Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Jay Barrett in Kodiak, Ed Ronco and Ann Bryce in Sitka, and Rosalie Lowen in Haines. APRN's Peter Pumpkin Eater Granitz reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie the Axe Fight. Our audio engineer is Kristen Spooky Spack. Josh Evil Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Zombie Slayer Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and care patients with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association. Falls are the leading cause of workplace fatalities in the construction industry. Your family's well-being depends on you staying healthy during the work season. Employers, for no-cost safety and health consultation and training services, call Alaska Occupational Safety and Health at 1-800-656-4972. This message sponsored by the Alaska Labor Standards and Safety.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.